Hello and welcome to the Zero to Finals podcast. My name is Tom, and in this episode, I'm going to be talking to you about hepatitis, particularly viral hepatitis and autoimmune hepatitis. If you want to follow along with written notes on this topic, you can follow along at zerotofinals.com/hepatitis or in the gastroenterology section of the Zero to Finals medicine book. So let's get straight into it. The word hepatitis basically describes inflammation of the liver, and this can vary from chronic low-level inflammation to acute and severe inflammation that leads to large areas of necrosis of liver tissue and liver failure. So the causes of hepatitis can be alcoholic hepatitis, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease that progresses to hepatitis, viral hepatitis, which we're going to go through here, autoimmune hepatitis, which we're also going to go through here, and drug-induced hepatitis, for example, in paracetamol overdose. How do patients with hepatitis present? Well, hepatitis can vary from being completely asymptomatic, or it could present with non-specific symptoms, things like abdominal pain, fatigue, pruritus, which is itching all over the body, muscle and joint aches, nausea and vomiting, jaundice, which is that yellow discoloration that the skin goes when there's a very high bilirubin level, and fever, which you might get with viral hepatitis. Typical biochemical findings when you do a blood test: on the liver function test, they'll become deranged with high transaminases, particularly things like AST and ALT, with proportionately less of a rise in ALP or alkaline phosphatase. And this pattern of high transaminases with slightly less raised alkaline phosphatase is called a hepatitic picture. Transaminases are liver enzymes that are released into the blood as a result of inflammation of those liver cells. They sort of leak into the blood with all of that inflammation going on in that area. Bilirubin can also rise as a result of inflammation of the liver cells, and it's the high bilirubin that causes jaundice. So first, starting with viral hepatitis, let's talk about them in alphabetical order. So we'll start with hepatitis A. And hepatitis A is actually the most common viral hepatitis worldwide, but it's relatively rare in the UK. And in 2017, in England and Wales, we only had less than 1,000 cases in total. It's an RNA virus, and it's transmitted via the fecal-oral route. And what this basically means is that feces from an infected patient has somehow contaminated food or water and is transmitted when somebody eats that contaminated food or water and then contracts the virus. It usually presents with things like nausea, vomiting, loss of interest in food, which we call anorexia, and jaundice. And it can cause cholestasis, which is slowing of the passage of bile through the biliary system. And this presents with dark urine and pale stools. And the dark urine is because the bilirubin starts to be excreted through the urine, and the pale stools is because that bilirubin is not managing to get through the biliary system into the gut, where it joins and causes the discoloration of the stools. It also presents with moderate hepatomegaly. Hepatitis A usually resolves without any treatment at all in around 1 to 3 months, and so management is really just with basic analgesia. There is a vaccine available for people who are travelling to endemic areas, and this reduces the chance of developing the infection. And if you find somebody who's developed hepatitis A, it's a notifiable disease, which means you need to give public health a ring and let them know that you have a case. Let's move on to hepatitis B. Hepatitis B is a DNA virus. It's transmitted by direct contact with blood or bodily fluids, such as during sexual intercourse or in people who share needles, for example, IV drug users or people getting tattoos. It can also be passed through sharing contaminated household products, and this is things like toothbrushes. And it's even possible to contract hepatitis B through minor cuts or abrasions that come in contact with bodily fluids that contain the virus. It can be passed from mother to child during pregnancy and delivery, and this is something we call vertical transmission. And with hepatitis B, most people fully recover from the infection without any treatment within about 2 months. But about 10% of patients go on to become chronic hepatitis B carriers. And in these patients, the viral DNA has integrated into their own DNA. And so they continue to produce the viral proteins. So a big topic with hepatitis B in your exams is to interpret results from the antibodies. And this is also important when it comes to clinical practice. So let's talk about the viral markers of hepatitis B. Remember that the antibodies are produced by the immune system against pathogen proteins, and antigens are the proteins that are targeted by antibodies. So in this scenario, the antigens are part of the virus, and the antibodies are responses to that antigen from the immune system. So a very brief overview, hepatitis B surface antigen indicates an active infection, and that's actually part of the virus itself, the surface antigen. Hepatitis B E antigen is a marker of viral replication, and it implies high infectivity. Hepatitis B core antibody implies past or current infection. Hepatitis B surface antibody implies that either the person's been vaccinated or they've come in contact with the virus in the past or at present. And then the hepatitis B virus DNA is a direct count of the viral load or the virus DNA that's in the circulation. So this gives you an exact number of how many virus copies there are in the blood. When screening for hepatitis B, what we do is we test the hepatitis B surface antigen, and this shows active infection. And we also test the hepatitis B core antibody, and this shows previous infection. If these results are positive, it indicates that they could have a current infection. So further testing is done for hepatitis B E antigen and viral load. So let's talk in more detail to try and clarify all of these different letters and what they mean, because it's useful to really understand these concepts. So the hepatitis B surface antibody basically demonstrates an immune response to the hepatitis B surface antigen. So the surface antigen is part of the viral protein, and the surface antibody is the immune's response to that viral protein. Hepatitis B surface antigen is given as part of the vaccine. So having a positive hepatitis B surface antibody may simply indicate that they've just been vaccinated and they've created an immune response to the vaccine. Hepatitis B surface antibody may also be present in response to an infection. So either they've had the vaccine or they have the infection. Therefore, we need other viral markers to distinguish whether this is a result of vaccine or previous infection. The hepatitis B core antibody can be useful for distinguishing whether they've had an acute, chronic, or past infection. And we can measure IgM versions or IgG versions of the hepatitis B core antibody. The IgM version of the hepatitis B core antibody implies that the immune system has created an immediate response to an active infection. And it will give a high titer if it's an acute infection and a low titer if it's a chronic infection. So a high level means that they've got an acute infection that's really severe and their immune system's made a big response to it. And a low IgM version means that they've got a chronic infection and their immune system has produced a more chronic, sustained response to that infection. If you have a negative hepatitis B surface antigen and a positive hepatitis B core antibody, IgG version, this indicates a past infection because they've cleared the hepatitis B surface antigen, but they have a clear immune response to a previous hepatitis B infection. Finally, we'll talk about the hepatitis B E antigen, and this is quite important. The E antigen basically represents that the patient is in an acute phase of the infection and the virus is actively replicating. So the E antigen basically means that the virus is having a high turnover, producing lots and lots of viral copies, and is an active infection. Therefore, a hepatitis B E antigen correlates very well with their infectivity. So if the hepatitis B E antigen is higher, they're highly infectious to others. When the hepatitis E antigen is negative, but the hepatitis E antibody is positive, this implies that they've been through a phase where the virus has been replicating very quickly, but now the virus has stopped replicating and they're less infectious. To talk briefly about the hepatitis B vaccine, the vaccine is available and it involves injecting the hepatitis B surface antigen. So you don't get a full copy of the virus, you just get one of the proteins. And the immune system creates a response to this hepatitis B surface antigen, and they develop hepatitis B surface antibodies. So antibodies against that surface antigen. We then check that the vaccine has worked by checking the hepatitis B surface antibodies. The vaccine requires 3 doses at different intervals. And vaccination to hepatitis B is actually part of the routine UK vaccination schedule, and it's part of the 6-in-1 vaccine that we give to children. So how do you manage patients with hepatitis B? Well, it's worth having a low threshold for screening patients who you think might be at risk of hepatitis B. So this is people who have multiple sexual partners, for example, sex workers, or it could be IV drug users, or anybody who's taking part in any at-risk activities. If you find somebody who has hepatitis B, it's worth screening for other bloodborne viruses like hepatitis A and HIV and any other sexually transmitted diseases. We'd refer these patients on to either gastroenterology or hepatology or infectious diseases for specialist management. We need to notify public health again, as this is a notifiable disease. We would advise a patient to stop smoking and stop drinking alcohol to minimise the damage that happens to their liver. And then they need education about how to reduce their risk of transmitting the infection onto other individuals. Then we test for any complications. So we can do a fibro scan to test for cirrhosis. And we need to do ultrasound scans to look for hepatocellular carcinoma. And then we need to treat any of the complications that we find. So if they've developed cirrhosis or hepatocellular carcinoma, we treat those. We can use antiviral medication to slow the progression of the disease and reduce the infectivity of the patient. And if they go on to have end-stage liver failure, then liver transplantation would be the appropriate treatment. Next, let's talk about hepatitis C. So some basic information, hepatitis C is an RNA virus. It's spread by blood and bodily fluids. There's no vaccine available for hepatitis C, but it is now curable with direct-acting antiviral medications. So a basic disease course, 1 in 4 patients will be able to fight off the virus and make a full recovery without any treatment. But 3 in 4 people will go on to become chronic hepatitis C sufferers. The complications of hepatitis C include liver cirrhosis, which has loads of associated complications, and hepatocellular carcinoma. How do we test for hepatitis C? Well, it's a lot more straightforward than doing hepatitis B testing. You simply do a hepatitis C antibody test as a screening test, and if you find that antibody test is positive, you go on to do hepatitis C RNA testing. So you confirm the diagnosis of hepatitis C with this test, and you actually calculate an exact viral load to find out how many viral copies the patient has in their blood. You can also use this to check their individual genotype of hepatitis C, which helps you guide treatment. So what's the management of hepatitis C? Well, it's very similar to hepatitis B, actually. You need to have a low threshold for screening patients who are at risk of hepatitis C, so people with the same risk factors really as hepatitis B. You screen for other blood-borne viruses like hepatitis A, B and HIV and other sexually transmitted diseases. Again, refer on to gastroenterology, hepatology or infectious diseases for the specialist management. Notify public health. Stop smoking and alcohol. Educate them about reducing the risk of transmission. Test for complications by doing, for example, a FibroScan and an ultrasound scan. And then we can use antiviral treatments, particularly direct-acting antivirals, which are specifically tailored to the particular type of genotype that patient has, so the particular type of hepatitis C, and they're successful in curing the infection in over 90% of patients. But the treatment usually takes about 8 to 12 weeks. Again, if they develop end-stage liver failure, then we would require a liver transplant. Let's talk about hepatitis D. Hepatitis D is an RNA virus, and hepatitis D only survives in patients who also have a hepatitis B infection. What it does is attach itself to the hepatitis B surface antigen, and it requires this to survive, so it can't survive without the hepatitis B infection also being present. There's very low rates of hepatitis D in the UK, and if hepatitis D occurs along with hep B, then it increases the risk of the complications and makes the disease more severe. There's no specific treatment for hepatitis D, and it's a notifiable disease, so public health need to be told about all the cases that you come across. Finally, for the viral hepatitises, we need to cover hep E. Hepatitis E is also an RNA virus. It's transmitted by the fecal-oral route, and it's very rare in the UK. Normally, it only produces a mild illness, and the virus is cleared within a month or so, and no treatment's required. Rarely, hepatitis E can progress to chronic hepatitis and liver failure, more so in patients that are already immunocompromised. And again, public health need to be notified of all cases. Next, we'll talk about autoimmune hepatitis. Autoimmune hepatitis is a rare cause of chronic hepatitis, and we're not sure exactly what causes it, but we think there's a genetic predisposition and that the condition is triggered by environmental factors, for example, a viral infection that causes a T-cell mediated response against the liver cells. So this is where the T-cells of the immune system decide that the liver cells are harmful, or at least some of the proteins in the liver cells are harmful, and they alert the rest of the immune system to attack these cells. So it's an autoimmune condition. There's two types that actually occur at different ages of onset and have different autoantibodies. So type 1 occurs in adults, and type 2 typically occurs in children. So a typical type 1 autoimmune hepatitis patient is a woman in their late 40s or 50s, who presents around or after the menopause and presents less acutely with a sort of grumbling fatigue and features of liver disease on examination. Type 2 autoimmune hepatitis is patients presenting in their teenage or early 20s, presenting with acute hepatitis with very high transaminases and a jaundice. Investigations will show a hepatitis picture with raised transaminases like ALT and AST, and they also have high IgG levels when you check their immunoglobulins, and it's also associated with multiple autoantibodies. In type 1, there's three typical autoantibodies: anti-nuclear antibodies, or ANA, anti-smooth muscle antibodies, or anti-soluble liver antigen antibodies. In type 2, there's two typical antibodies: anti-liver kidney microsomes 1 antibodies and anti-liver cytosol antigen type 1 antibodies. You can confirm the diagnosis with a liver biopsy, and treatment involves high-dose steroids, so prednisolone, that are then tapered over time as you introduce other immunosuppressants, particularly azathioprine. Immunosuppressant treatment is usually successful in inducing a remission. However, it typically requires lifelong immunosuppression to prevent the disease from coming back. If they go on to develop end-stage liver failure, then they might require a liver transplant. However, autoimmune hepatitis often recurs in the transplanted livers. So the immune system also starts to target the transplanted liver and cause damage to that as well.